Steve Todorok, geologist and investment advisor with Sprott Asset Management. Welcome to the Common Investor. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So Steve, it's been a couple of years since you and I have spoken, and your real niche is kind of in the junior mining sector, obviously, identifying the next big plays but I want to start by asking you, what did you learn from your time running mining companies that you still find valuable now as an investment advisor and, mining company analyst?
Well, when you're running a junior company, not only are you hiring people, the employees, you've got to raise money from investors, whether that's private wealthy individuals or with the help of stock brokerage firms or funds. And then you've got to go out and find projects that are a good fit that, shareholders are going to want to see you spending money on. Mm-hmm. So learning to interact with all those different people, when you're running a public company, that was really good experience. And, sitting on the other side of the table now, I think, I can respect and appreciate what all those companies are trying to do. So just part of the rounding out, of my career, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm. So obviously you focus on the mining sector a lot. Where would you say we are right now in this cycle, this bull cycle for gold miners, and maybe we can include silver miners in that maybe? How do you kind of break this cycle apart to think about it?
Well, I've never seen fundamentals supporting a strong gold price like this before. Obviously, central banks buying a lot of gold to move away from the US dollar. We've never seen something like that before. So I don't know what lays ahead. I don't know, if there's a clock ticking away or where are we in that clock? Mm-hmm. As long as we see the central banks hanging on to their gold, I think this is going to last for some time. When I first moved down to start working for Rick Rule 23 years ago, gold was $425 an ounce. I never thought we'd see gold up here. So, gold just keeps going higher and higher. It's going to take a break along the way, climbing higher. But, gold is getting harder and harder to find, and it's supply and demand. So that's why I always start with my explanation of where's gold going to go. If it gets harder to find and people still want it, they're going to have to pay for it to get, dug out of the ground. So I think at least for the foreseeable future, gold looked pretty good. The only thing that could muddy the waters is if we've got a good gold price, what's the cost of mining? As long as they stay anywhere around where they are, call it under $2,000 an ounce, mining companies should continue to make strong profits. So I'm not sitting here. I see no sign of a top at this point. Mm-hmm.
So I guess inherent in that answer would be the idea, if I was going to ask the question, what would mark a top for you? And again, going back to part of your answer would be, let's say, central banks starting to sell gold in a meaningful way?
That would have to be the obvious. Yeah, if we wake up one morning and we start hearing that the banks are selling a lot of their gold or all their gold, that would be the worst thing I would want to hear.
Would there be any other kind of considerations towards that, Steve? What would kind of mark a top in your mind for gold? A cyclical top?
Again, if gold just, like gold could drop down to $3,500 an ounce tomorrow if it just stayed there. If it stays, just, historically, gold mining companies have been lucky to make a couple hundred dollars an ounce in profit margins. If they can keep making $1,000 or $1,500 profit margins, that's fabulous. Again, is somewhere up here the new gold price? Maybe we just turn into a good, steady, regular, healthy market and get rid of the word bull market.
So with all of the, let's say, the geopolitical tensions, especially with the conflict in Iran kind of ebbing and flowing over the last month here, did the gold and silver prices react the way that you expected them to, or did it surprise you the way that they are reacting to those tensions and that major conflict in the world?
I've been very impressed how well gold has held up, you know, and the stocks. You know, we're down off the highs, but we've held up, I think, really well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've had a nice recovery in the last 2-3 weeks, you know, coming back up somewhat. But even at their low, I think what was gold, maybe it hit $4,300 an ounce. That somewhere around there was the low, and we didn't stay there that long. So I've been quite impressed. You know, I obviously don't know what's going to happen or when it's going to happen, but I'm quite happy with what gold and the stocks have done. Mm-hmm.
So has this newer or the new higher price level over the last, let's call it 6 months here, has that fundamentally changed the mining industry as a result of that? Obviously, margins have expanded greatly. But what else has changed in the market due to the higher metals prices?
Well, I just think, you know, with the higher gold prices, strong profit margins, mining companies have cleaned up their balance sheet fabulously. That's a big difference that we've just experienced in the last couple of years. And as long as they're smart with their money, you know, that should set the way for a pretty healthy future.
And obviously, I think a lot of downstream effects come from that, one of which being more capital expenditure for more exploration, right?
Yes. You know, it starts with the big healthy companies, a healthier there, you get a trickle-down effect, I think is what you're kind of saying. The majors, you know, pay off debt, pay out dividends, buy back shares, and then if they got extra money, they'll do joint ventures with some juniors they like or private placements in juniors they like. And you know, and then at the same time, as their healthier investors are feeling better because mining companies are healthy, making profits, so the investors are prepared to go finance other juniors. And that's what I really like to see, as many juniors as possible out there, well-funded to go do good quality exploration. You know, start basic exploration, soil sampling, prospecting, geophysics, you know, identifying worthy targets to then bring in the drills. That's the expensive part of the business, and then drill anomalies and let's hope for big new discoveries. So I think we're seeing that really good, healthy environment going on right now. I just got an email from a friend. He's just had announced a $10 million bought deal financing. Good on him. You know, and he's pretty small. So, and I know the company and the group, they're going to spend that $10 million very wisely. So I like to see all that. So I just sit back, let them all go drilling and exploring and see what comes out of it.
So does that end up being basically one of the more important things to you? Let's say, would it be your top three on important things is basically a roadmap and a good steward of capital out of a new company or a new discovery like that?
It's a big part. You know, the kind of stock I'm looking for in general, you know, with my geological background, is I want a stock that's got as many catalysts as possible to push the share price higher. And bar nothing, the best example of that is a big good grade discovery, because it starts with the discovery drill hole. Stock doesn't start moving up when a company's doing, you know, geophysics or soil sampling or trenching, stuff like that. But when they start drilling, if they hit on a good hole, the discovery drill hole, that's when the stock starts to move. Mm-hmm. And after you drill one good hole, you move the drill over 50 to 100 meters and you try drilling another hole. If you hit there, you move it over again and again. And each time you're moving the drill over, you're starting to grow that new deposit bigger and bigger. And then the market comes in and does his thing, you know, revaluing the market cap of the company and the share price. So every 4 to 8 weeks when they put out a new batch of drill results, if they're good, they've grown the deposit bigger. The stock usually goes up on that positive news. So that's going to happen. It takes at least 2 years, sometimes 3 years to find out if you can successfully drill a deposit big enough that it is considered to be economic. You don't drill off a deposit in 6 months. So you've got 2 to 3 years of news coming out. And if that's all good, usually the share price just keeps climbing higher and higher. And then ultimately, if it is big enough and they they undertake the feasibility studies. If they're good, it goes up a little more. And then ultimately, they probably get taken over at a nice friendly takeover premium. Mm-hmm. So there's really very few other kind of stocks that does that. We have in the last year to year and a half saw another kind of company go up very nicely. And that's when the big gold mining companies were selling some of their non-core assets, i.e. mines that were too small for them. There's a handful of small companies, and some of them just were brand newly created companies, or others were companies that have been around quite a while with a bit of a track record. They were able to work out deals with the big companies to buy those smaller mines. And upon acquiring them, overnight, that those companies turned into significant new gold producers. You know, whether they're mining 150,000 ounces up to 300,000 ounces a year. You know, at these prices, those companies were knocking it out of the park, making extremely strong profits. So they're able to self-fund at their own drilling right at their known mine sites. The best place to look for a new gold deposit is as close to a gold mine as you can get. Because usually you don't just get one deposit at a mine. There's usually more around it type of thing. So those companies were, you know, the multiple catalysts in those stories are ongoing drilling. They've got lots of money from their cash flow, and they're going to be doing lots of drilling in and around the mine, just looking to extend the life of the mine, you know, replace next year what you're going to mine this year sort of thing. But hopefully on top of that, you make a new discovery of a new zone or new deposit near the mine that's going to grow the annual production as well as extend the mine life. So there's a number of catalysts in those kind of stories, but like I said, they're pretty well done. The big companies are pretty well sold everything that they consider to be too small, so there's no more of those out there. So next in line will be companies that have been drilling and advancing gold deposits they found in the last 3 to 8 years, call it, and they're building the mines themselves slowly. Eventually, those mines get into production. So I'm open to any of those kinds of stories, and I'm looking for them, but those three types of stories just don't happen very often. Then you're down the ladder, you know, to the rest of the exploration companies that are much more speculative.
So, Steve, would you say with your 23 years working at Sprott, is that your, let's say, biggest goal or biggest aim, is to find these stories that start at that one first big drill hole? And are you, let's say, more so aiming for those 100 bagger type companies while being patient, or do you try to spread on something that is more so like a, let's say, a 10 bagger and you have more of them? Like, is your investing strategy more so focused around these bigger swings, as it were?
No, I'm not looking for 10 bagger, 20 bagger, 100 bagger type of thing. I'm happy if my clients double their money, better than that, triple their money. So I tend to buy, you know, I want to, if I see a brand new discovery that I really like, the stock's going to have shot up quite a bit on that announcement, no doubt, and I have no problem paying up for it. So, you know, if a stock shot up a lot, well, I'm not even thinking I got a shot at a 10 bagger. But it might feel really good that we're going to at least double our money, maybe triple it. So buy more, get clients bigger positions. You know, to get a 10 bagger, you got to at least double your money first. Then you got to triple it, you know, and then maybe at the end of the day, say, hey, I got a 10 bagger out of it. Maybe you got to, you know, I tend to buy tranches in stocks for my clients. I'll buy that first bit when if I get excited and I liked it, I'll buy the first bit. And then I have no problem, you know, 3 months, 6 months later, if I've watched the drill results come out and they're good, I'll buy another tranche, you know, and then another tranche down the road. So along the way, by the time the story's done, I may have went in the market and bought 5 different tranches at different share prices. And maybe the first tranche might've been a 10 bagger and the last tranche was a double. Add it all up, we made good money. I'm happy with that. You know, I like it. You know, I got into a number of stocks when the stock shot up, you know, within days up to the $5 level. And I have no problem getting my clients in at that price type of thing. Hey, the stock reacted that good for a reason. That's a really good hole. We've got an increased chance this stock's going to say double, and I'll be happy. Mm-hmm.
So let's say you miss that first little bit. Do you look at the Lassan curve? Basically, for those that don't understand what that is the, let's say, that lag time between first exciting drill hole discovery, stock brace shoots up, and then you have that couple year lull, especially in the share price, where the company is developing, as you said, drilling the resource, proving more of the resource out. Is that another spot where you try to buy some of these tranches before they hit production? Or do you have a shorter time frame than, let's say, first drill hole to actual first pour?
I wouldn't say I have a time frame. You know, I really want to be in on that first drill hole, first 1 to 5 drill holes. You know, you can't predict who's going to make it. So on that Lassan curve type of thing, you know, it's a flat line going to the left or previous years. That's when the company's out doing the basic, you know, boots on the ground type exploration. There's none of that work is exciting, but that's how you identify and put together anomalies that are going to be drill tested. I like to think I'm usually one of the first guys into good looking new discoveries. And then I'd sit back and monitor the drilling, maybe go look at the project. And, you know, more times than not, historically, you know, it's pretty quick after the company, if they're successfully able to drill and grow the deposit big enough and it's big enough for the majors, usually that's when you see the takeover somewhere after that. And then the majors will come in and do the studies type of thing. But sometimes, you know, the juniors have to go all the way and, you know, not only do the studies, but build the mine and show it can produce what they told the world it should. But I've been in some stocks, geez, 15 years, not many, you know, lots for at least 5-6 years. I'm happy if it's only 2 to 3 years, but it really doesn't matter. Like we've just watched in the last 2 years, most of the stocks I've got my clients into right now, I had them in 5 years ago and they've led the charge. They've done fabulously. You would have thought that if they were the top stocks back then, that's as high as their gold. As gold kept climbing higher and higher, all the stocks went higher. That's the easiest thing that's going to push a share price higher is the rising gold price. You know, but I want more catalyst than that. I don't want to go to bed every night having to pray that gold's going to go up some more tomorrow.
Right. So that was my next question is, you know, does this market change the major's behavior in, let's say, themselves or a division of the major paying attention to the drill holes and not necessarily needing a PEA from the junior miner next door in order to have them as a either a takeover target or being ready to take over that company? Are they doing some of that work themselves?
Yeah, there's no hard answer to that. I think it's a little bit everything. You know, we just saw a major take over 2 juniors in the last week and everybody was bored to death wondering what took so long. It was so blatantly obvious that should have been done, but finally the takeover happened just days ago. And, you know, one of the juniors, the more advanced, had done, you know, various studies. So the major knew what they're buying. But one person on the major sat on the board of directors of a small company that took over. So their representative was well aware of what was going on. It's like, what's taking so long? Let's just get this deal, especially in today's world where the majors have so much cash, you know, tidy things up. Other times they're just going to, you know, maybe a junior's got a project in a country where, you know, one major isn't or no majors are. And so all of them are just watching these companies, you know, advance their projects drilling and, you know, just realizing, hey, they're looking pretty good, but nobody's making a move. You know, again, with the strong profits and the amount of cash a lot of these majors are sitting on right now, it wouldn't surprise me we're going to see a number of, you know, takeovers in the foreseeable future, and with some of the bigger countries moving into, you know, what are perceived to be more risky countries, not really risky, but more than what they're used to type of thing. They got to do something.
Because these bigger deposits are becoming harder and harder to come by, right?
Yeah, in safe jurisdictions. Yeah, they are. You know, we found all the easy deposits that are close to surface in Nevada and Canada and, you know, other places like that. So they're having to go further afield. You know, they're certainly dusting off mature areas, trying to look at that. But you know, I'm not saying, you know, going to Russia or China, but there's certainly some countries that could, you know, get some worthy consideration for work.
Mm-hmm. Has the, let's say, the risk appetite or, you know, political environment changed dramatically over the last decade for which jurisdictions are palatable for these majors to step into?
Ooh, but that's a real country by country thing. But just even kind of answering that question or backing up a little, I quite like what's going on here with the, call it deglobalization, where countries are saying we need to be more supportive of mining in our backyard. You know, we've got to lessen the regulations, make it easier for companies to get permits and to build roads and to build mines, because we don't want to have to rely on other countries for metals that we need. You know, if we've got those metals in our country, we should be encouraging the mining industry to explore and try and find them and build mines to produce our own country's needs. I really like that, because that could open up some areas, you know, in Canada, the United States, you know, Australia. But other countries, it's, you know, it's country by country.
So, Steve, do you look at any, let's say, streaming or royalty plays as a reasonable piece of your portfolio?
They're not really for me. Again, you know, I'm a geologist with a fair bit of experience. There's definitely a lot better geologists out there, but maybe I know just enough to be dangerous type of thing. I get up in the morning and I got to be excited about what I'm doing, and using the geology part of my knowledge is what really, you know, lights my fire type of thing and gets me excited. That's why I like the new discovery place. Mm-hmm. Royalty companies and big mining companies, they're definitely for certain types of investors. For investors that want exposure to gold, that don't know anything about this business, and if they're going to try doing it themselves, I strongly advise them to just go with royalty companies, streaming companies, and the large producers. You know, just keep it simple, because you don't know anything about the rest of it.
Right. Yeah, it seems like
I will have a lot, you know, a lot of my clients, put it this way, all my clients should have, you know, the big royalty companies, the big miners somewhere, either in an account with me or another account. I know a lot of my clients have physical gold bullion somewhere else, and some of them have stocks. They shouldn't just own, you know, smaller stocks. And I do not own the small juniors, really high risk. I like to think I own the best ones, which are the biggest of the juniors type of thing. But, you know, everybody should have as their core holdings some of the big producers and big royalty companies, and then as you go down the ladder to the small ones, I'd be more careful. You know, there are differences in the smaller royalty companies.
Is there any room in your portfolio for these mid-tiers that are, as you mentioned, these couple 100,000 ounce producers?
Well, call it being in the right place at the right time. I did really good getting into 3 or 4 of those companies that were able to buy, you know, non-core mines from the majors in the last year and a half. Mm-hmm. And they've been fabulous. You know, I'm aware of some other ones out there that I don't own, but it's like, if I'm going to go buy some of those, I got to sell something that I have, my clients have. And it's like pulling hen's teeth, you know, to get me to sell some of my really good stocks that I like, you know, I really got to love something new. So, you know, I'm pretty happy with what we have right now, but I keep looking for something brand new.
Right. How do you look at prospect generators within the industry? Is that something that you think is helpful? Are they helpful to you to kind of, let's say, bring new projects to your awareness? How do you look at those?
I need as many juniors out there exploring. Mm-hmm. You know, so most juniors have one project they're working. Prospect generators could have 5, 10 to 20 projects that they're getting, you know, various companies to fund and to drill. So I just need as many drills turning. I don't care who owns them. You know, I can't predict which company, whether they're just a one property junior or a prospect generator with 5 to 15 projects, you can't predict which one of those guys is going to make the discovery on what property. You just got to sit and wait for the announcement. So I just want as many drills turning as possible. Mm-hmm.
So Steve, are there any other commodities that are particularly on your radar, or is it mostly just gold that you're focused on?
Gold, silver, and copper. Most of our clients, want gold exposure. Silver pretty well comes along with it. More and more gold is found in copper deposits. So you have to be okay with copper and gold. And by the way, copper's future's looking pretty good. So those are the three main focuses for me. But I'm also, if somebody announced another Red Dog type of zinc discovery, that's Teck's big zinc mine up in Alaska. The average grade is somewhere around 20% zinc. If a junior made a zinc discovery that good, I'd be all over it, or nickel or uranium. I've been into a couple of the uranium discoveries over the year, but I want to see, the same sort of thing. Really good drill holes initially, the stuff that, good quality mines are made out of, because I'm hoping, especially something like uranium, I want to have a lot of confidence that one of the big companies like Cameco is going to be there at the end of the day to build the mine and to deal with the government to get the permits. That's not something for a small company that's never, applied for a uranium permit before.
Right.
So I'm open to other things, but things like rare earths, I didn't study that when I went to geology, and I kind of like to say I don't want to read a few books over a weekend and declare myself a rare earth expert. That's just doesn't happen. Like I said, I'm an okay geologist, but there's a lot better geology out there. I could learn a lot more. Part of why I go on field trips to look at mines is to get out in the field and see what the young geologists are using for technology, and I can talk to them and what's the new lingo, and just ongoing education type of thing. I don't need to start learning about rare earth minerals.
Right. Steve, many companies, let's say, value, and I guess many companies and banks value gold, let's say at $2,500, $3,000 an ounce on their projections for, the next year, couple of years. When do you think banks and or these companies start pricing in, let's say, a $4,000 gold price into their projections?
We've been moving in that direction. Gold, the problem was gold moved up so quickly, so sharply. There's a thing called the 3-year trailing average gold price that everybody in the business relies on a lot. Mm-hmm. For doing, feasibility studies and, if they're going to buy a mine or if they're going to sell a mine. Mining analysts use it for their target prices and everything. And for the last 2 years, as gold has really been flying high, You can calculate a 3-year trading average gold price, but it's almost meaningless. It's a bad average. So what we need to do is just that's why I say just level out for almost 3 years here. It's a great gold price. They're making good profit margins, but let's just get a good solid 3-year trailing average gold price so that everybody, if 3-year trailing average price tends to be up around $4,500, the more reliable that 3-year average is, more people will use that in their calculations. So we're still not there yet. Every day that goes by, that average gets a little further, a little firmer. And we've already started seeing, investors and companies using a higher price than what they would have been using a year ago or 2 years ago. Look at Newmont as a bit of an aside. I think it was two Decembers ago, December 31st, they announced their annual reserves, so all the analysts and everybody can do their thing for figuring out, how much are they going to mine and what's the target price. And I think it was 2 years ago, Newmont used $1,700 gold to define their reserves. I think gold was trading about $3,200 an ounce. And just recently, this last December, I think they upped it to $2,200 an ounce, and we were up over $4,000 an ounce.
Yeah.
So they're being extremely cautious. Smaller companies will be, more speculative and use a little higher price. Nobody should use anywhere near the current price. Mm-hmm. But, that 3-year average is getting firmed up every day that, gold stays up here. So it'll come around. And as the longer it stays a little higher, some groups, analysts will be more tempted to, you know, use a little higher price, still nowhere near the current price. So that has been happening. I put out a couple articles to my clients about that 3-year trailing average, you know, because most people don't know what it means, but it's very important in the gold mining sector.
Mm-hmm. Does that also possibly bring in more, let's say, generalist money from Wall Street into the sector because it is so much firmer and the margins end up being so much more reliable with this higher price?
It absolutely should bring them in. They've got more confidence. You know, they can look at some hard numbers that they have confidence in. Like I say, you know, if I look at a 3-year trailing average price for the last 3 years, I just shake my head. I said, well, it's not that good yet, but every day we stay up here, it's getting better. So it's better to measure on a monthly basis or every quarter rather than every day, because it's hard to watch it every day and make any kind of sense. But just going back a year, you say, yeah, it's firm enough.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you originally basically moved to California to work with Rick Rule. What are some of the most important lessons that he taught you that you found invaluable or, let's say, counterintuitive at the time?
He pretty well just let me run on my own. You know, I didn't change. Right from day number one, you know, I was into the new discovery plays, and partly why I was day number one. I started in 2003. I think in 1988, three friends of mine and myself started in a little investment club. And I think we each put in $50 a month to start out, and that was going to be the game plan. And we were going to go stake some mining properties because we were all geologists, and then try and joint venture option well to some juniors, get some shares in cash, and we could use that for investing along with the $50 a month. And then, you know, we started picking stocks. I tended to be the guy that picked the stocks, and they tended to be the new discovery plays. And so I'd had from 1988 to 2003, I was doing that while I was running my junior mining companies. We'd get together in a little group and have our meetings, and you know, we were picking stocks. So, you know, I'd already had 15 years of that kind of experience. So when I walked into Rick's office, sat down on my desk, I just sort of kept doing that.
Right. And how about, let's say, questions or a piece of knowledge that you wish that investors would ask you more about? You know, is there something that your investors, by and large, need to know that you wish more of them would ask you?
Well, for starters, I manage all my clients' money. Mm-hmm. So they don't ask me, they're not allowed to influence me when it comes to the kind of stock I'm picking for. That's the true definition of managing someone's money.
Right.
I need to know they believe in gold. You know, if you don't think gold is going to, especially sitting here today, if you don't think gold is going to stay anywhere around here or go higher, why are you investing in these stocks? Mm-hmm. I'm going to have a hard time making you money if gold really goes down, if that's what you really believe. I encourage all my clients to call me, and I'm here to, you know, teach and talk geology 101. If you want to learn anything at all, I'm here to talk, and some do, most don't.
Right, because they're trusting you to manage that side of things for them so that they don't have to learn how to read drill results and things like that, right?
They're not gonna, you know, no, like I say, it took me 25 years in the mining industry to get that far, and I still wasn't, you know, what I'd call an expert. Mm-hmm. And another 23 years down here reading even more every day. So, you know, I send out, if a company puts out that I've got my clients to, if a company puts out what I think is different or pertinent news, I'll just type up a little greetings with a couple sentences, just saying what I think about them. They're good. You know, here's why. So my clients only need to read that, and they basically can say, hey, Steve's on the job. He's obviously monitoring it. And I always say, you know, feel free to give me a call with any questions, and very few call. They're just happy that Steve is looking after their stocks and they can go golfing or playing with their grandkids or traveling or whatever they're doing.
Excellent, Steve. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners to think about or to consider before we wrap up here?
I guess have somebody helping you somehow. You picking these stocks, like Rick Rule used to send me a bunch of listeners list of stocks to go over, and they wanted me to tell more about them, and it was shocking what people were buying. And I don't think that's really changed. I don't get those anymore, but you know, in this sector, you need to have some help, you know, whether it's a newsletter writer or a guy like me, just somebody that knows something about, you know, these results, because the average person cannot read drill results and make heads or tails of them. And if you don't want to do that, well, then just stay with the big boys, play it safe with the royalty companies and the big miners.
So if anybody wants that help, they can reach out at sprott.com.
Yes. Perfect. Yeah. My email is spoderick@sprott.com.
Excellent. We'll put that in the show notes as well. Steve, thanks so much for your time today. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.